Thank you, John. Our next speaker is from Phoenix. Please help me welcome Martin.
Hi, everybody. My name is Martin, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Martin.
I really am an alcoholic. I've lost the ability to control my drinking. I guess you can hear me okay. I belong in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was kind of fun, you know, being invited to this deal. The old young timers or the young old timers, or but I haven't found it necessary to pick up the first drink of alcohol since July 11th in 1987, and I was 24 years old when that happened. You know, I don't know if I was born an alcoholic, but when I took my first drink, an alcoholic was born. And I heard that in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I remember the first time that it wasn't my first drink, but I remember the first time that I got to drink the way that I wanted to, and that was uncontrollably. And that's what our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, defines alcoholism as the inability to control their drinking. And that's what makes me an alcoholic. I might probably think a little bit more than I should about different things, but one thing that I've given a tremendous amount of consideration to is alcoholism. And I belong in Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm an alcoholic. You know, and our third tradition tells us that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. But we also have the long form of that tradition. And if you read it, it talks about that all the members in Alcoholics Anonymous are alcoholics. And that's what unifies us. One of the other things I like to think about is our traditions, and I've been spending some time thinking about our first tradition, and it says that our common welfare should come first, and that personal recovery depends upon AA unity. And what that tells me is that my recovery depends upon me being united with Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not the other way around. It's not that Alcoholics Anonymous needs to unite itself with me to suit me and what I want. It means that I need to be unified with Alcoholics Anonymous. And what unifies me to AA is my alcoholism. And, from time to time I say some things that might, irritate people or they might disagree with, but you know, I earned my seat in Alcoholics, in AA, I could, qualify, I guess, but I think that you would believe me just by me being here that I belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I do. But I believe that in no time in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous that our fellowship is being threatened in a way that it really never has been. We had another speaker, and Larry was talking about anonymity and the electronic media world. I don't think that our co-founders could have had any idea of what we're facing, and that's our anonymity issues are just one of the concerns that I think that we have to think about. Something that I think a lot about, and I have a job title in Area 3 service that kind of qualifies me to think about it, to talk about it, that I'm the treatment coordinator for the Area 3 of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's something that concerns me gravely is really the notion that there is no such thing as alcoholism, that alcoholism does not exist, that alcoholism is just one addiction, just like anything else, just like whether it's caffeine or nicotine or opium or anything else. It's just the list of just one item on a list of addictions. And I think that nothing could be further from the truth, that we have a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And that book says quite clearly that alcoholics are men and women who've lost the ability to control their drinking, that There's something about us that's different, that we're bodily and mentally different from our fellows. Now, if someone can believe that or not, we don't convince anybody of anything outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. And even here in our rooms, it's not for really for anybody to try to convince anybody of anything. If we look at the definition of, you know, one accepted definition of what we do is in our preamble says that that we're a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other. That's what we do. You know, we share it with each other, not somebody outside the fellowship. We share our experience, strength, and hope with each other. And why do we do that? So that we can stay sober and help others to achieve sobriety. That's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't have opinions on outside issues. We don't try to convince anybody of anything. We don't defend ourselves. You know, I kind of watch, you know, the culture and watch the media, and in no time, and you know, in my, you know, what seems like kind of a long time, you know, to be sober for me, 23 years without a drink is a long time for a guy like me. But in my time in sobriety, that I see a lot of mention in the popular media of Alcoholics Anonymous and of what we do and what we don't do, and there's misconceptions, and on the internet, all kinds of things, you know, that we need to be vigilant about. And that it's nobody's job to be concerned about our traditions except us. The world has no responsibility to protect or honor or respect our traditions. We do. That's our job. And I like to I look at our literature, the things that we have printed about what we do and what we don't do, and you know, who we are as, you know, as a fellowship. And Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. There's absolutely no question in my mind that that I would, you know, I don't know if I would be dead, you know, or if I would be sitting in Folsom Prison or on Larkin Street in San Francisco with a needle on my arm, or you know, over in Van Buren in Phoenix, you know, wandering around in a daze, or if I'd be dead. I don't know. But I don't want any of those possibilities, I can tell you that. And I love sobriety, and that I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I mean, if, you know, I don't know who all we have here, you know, I mean, I'm sure we've got some people that are probably brand new in sobriety or just coming back. And it, you know, hang on tight. You know, as I sat through the previous general service workshop, and you know, and some of the speakers were talking about their predecessors and the people that have, you know, gone before them that have made this thing possible. And I think of that in kind of a, you know, in a macro way, you know, too, of our co-founders and the people that, you know, our pioneer time. And I can trace my sobriety back to the people, to a gentleman that goes way, that brought the message, that knew Bill Wilson, our co-founder, that brought sobriety to San Jose, California, and you know, brought Alcoholics Anonymous to San Jose. That's where I got sober. And I look at my heritage of the people that took that message and passed it on to me. And I'm, you know, forever grateful. You know, and, you know, from time to time, you know, I tell, you know, parts of my story and some things that I like to remember. You know, there are, you know, things, very key elements of my life that I don't ever want to forget. You know, I've seen a lot of people forget. You know, I've been around, you know, for, you know, a little while, you know, it seems like a long time. You know, and I've seen dozens, hundreds, you know, perhaps thousands of people disappear from Alcoholics Anonymous that are gone, you know, that are dead, or, you know, whatever happened to them, wherever people go when they stop coming here. And I've seen countless people, you know, come back and then come, you know, back again, or anything. But there are, you know, a number of things that I like to listen to about, you know, why they went out, why they, you know, drank again. And, you know, the first thing is that they stopped coming to meetings. You know, if you talk to any number of people that have, you know, relapsed, you'll find out that people that stop going to meetings will probably drink again. And I believe that. And my story is that I came in believing. You know, I've known countless people that have, you know, not wanted to be alcoholics and not wanted to be an AA. They wanted something else. But my situation was that it was bad enough for me that I wanted something else desperately. You know, I did not, I mean, I never really had an obsession to drink because I just drank, you know, every day. You know, and I just drank all the time. And but I had a desperate obsession to not drink, to, you know, stop drinking. And I was unable to. And our book talks about that, you know, the baffling feature of alcoholism is this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. And when I got a hold of that book for the first time, it was like I told my story, and it was, he just had it. And I read it, and it was like they're telling my story over and over and over again. And for 24 years, I felt like I was on the wrong planet, and that I didn't have, and you didn't speak the language of this planet. And then I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and that you spoke my language. You know, you were speaking my native tongue. And I understood. And I wanted to be here, and I wanted to follow the directions. And it was like when I came in, I was like I had an IV bottle of, you know, AA growth. You know, I couldn't get enough of it. And I kept coming, and I wanted more. And I had the good fortune to have some excellent sponsorship. That's some, you know, where I got sober, we definitely talked about the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and talked about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the traditions, and, you know, and I'm very grateful for that. And the people that I listened to talked about the seriousness, the gravity of alcoholism, and we read it at every single meeting, you know, and it says that with all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. That's it, you know, we beg of you. But I've seen a lot of people that have played with, you know, alcoholism. But it's a fatal illness, you know, and if you don't believe that, stick around and watch what happens. You know, you'll see people die from alcoholism. But see, that you can't, you know, I learned a long time ago, you can't scare anybody in this outfit with death or anything else. You know, that, you know, that if Alcoholics Anonymous is for the people that want it, you know. And even more so, it's not for the people that need it. It's really for the people that do it. You know, the people that have gone before me that taught me how to do it. You know, it was some very simple things. And you know, put the plug in the jug. You know, pick up the first drink no matter what happens. You know, keep coming here. Get a sponsor and follow directions. Get a big book. You know, and read what it says. Concede to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic and that you'll never be able to control your drinking. You know, and whether you believe, you know, you can believe that or not. There are people that will tell you that that alcoholism is just like anything else, but that's not true. You know, I am by, you know, you, maybe it is for you, but for me, that message will kill me. Okay, if I believe that I can control my drinking just like somebody else can, I'm a dead man. There's no doubt in my mind about that I have conceded to my innermost self that I am bodily and mentally different from other people. That message saved my life. You know, and if you're new here, hang on, you know, and join in and be part of us and get involved in service and find out what we do. Because Alcoholics Anonymous works, and it looks like I've got about 30 seconds left. I like this little clock here, and you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love the way that it works. I love the communication process. I love the way that there are no chieftains or commanders. You know, nobody is in charge here. We really are the most democratic, you know, organization on earth, and that your voice matters, and that if you're part of a home group, your group can have very, you know, a profound effect on the nature and the future of what we do here. But I'm going to go ahead and sit down, and thanks everybody for being here.
Thank you, Martin. Please help me welcome our next speaker, Tom.
My name's Tom. I'm an alcoholic. Got it. Okay. So when this goes down, that's it? Okay. Okay. Thanks to the committee for asking me to speak. Jim and Lindsay, who aren't here, but thanks, guys. I just realized something while I was sitting here. I realized that I've changed in some aspects since I was earlier sober. I used to think it would be cool to be a circuit speaker and have all that attention, you know. And I just realized that if you have that role, I don't know if this is true, but my little impression it would be that you'd have this canned pitch, and you'd have to kind of do the same pitch every time because that's what they're expecting. The committee asks you based on your tape, you know, and whatever. But I get, you know, I'm not like that. I'm just going to talk about where I'm at. I had a pretty good talk up until yesterday. It's pretty good. The bottom line is, and I'm a little distracted because I did something yesterday that I'm really not proud of. I hurt a friend yesterday and hurt myself in the process, and it sucks. And I'm thinking that that's really kind of part of my message. I mean, I can offer a lot of hope in a sense to people who are new that absolutely Alcoholics Anonymous works. I mean, I'm living proof of that. And I can also offer hope. You know, there's a lot of eloquent people in AA that can talk about all kinds of stuff, and it's really nice to hear. And there's lots of success stories in AA. And I've had varying degrees of both, but I can also be very articulate about how bad stuff can happen in sobriety, you know, and be able to stay sober. Because for me, that's what's been real. I mean, it's nice to talk about the nice stuff, not opposed to it, but I guess that's kind of partly not where my head's at today. So, I'm an alcoholic. I know what it's like to need to drink. I know what it's like to drink at work. I drank in the shower. I drank while I drove. I drank when I didn't want to. I know what it's like to stand in front of the mirror in the bathroom crying, cursing myself because I know I'm going to drink and I don't want to drink, but I drink anyway. I know that feeling of something's wrong with me, but I don't know exactly what. And a lot of people, of course, parents and, you know, police or whoever, girlfriends telling me there's something wrong with me, but they don't really know. And I don't know. I grew up here in town for the most part, and I was an uncomfortable kid. I never felt like I fit in, you know, anywhere really. I was just very uncomfortable, very awkward, and I always kind of envied other kids who seemed like popular or, you know, like they knew what they were doing, and I just wasn't that way. It's amazing that I can even do this kind of thing today and stand in front of people. I remember the first time, I think it was in third grade or something, and I had to do a book report or something in front of the class, and it just like terrified me, you know. I don't know. You know, I when I was in high school, these guys were out on the back football field one day after school, hanging around a picnic table doing something, and I went over there, and they're like, "Hey, you know, you want to do this?" And I don't know. Okay, you know, I didn't inhale. I pretended. I was afraid, it didn't take me long after that. You know, I started hanging out with this one guy, and he had a buddy who looked old enough to buy, and so my first drinking was on Boone's Farm strawberry wine, and my recollection of that first night was my buddy John got really drunk and threw up a lot. That was pretty funny, and yeah, I don't remember a whole lot about that other than It's also started a pattern. I liked drinking at cemeteries. I don't know, you know, and mortuaries. That's part of my story. Won't get to. But I don't know. It didn't seem like a big deal, you know. I mean, I went over to these guys' house a little bit and smoked a little pot and started drinking more and just kind of seemed like a thing to do. I don't know. I tried hanging out with the freaks. I tried hanging out with the cowboys. I tried hanging out with the jock. It's way too much energy hanging out with jocks. I was on the football team. It's like, geez, this is a lot of work.
God.
Partiers, that was a little easier. The brainy people didn't even want to go there. But the bottom line is I just never felt like I fit in anywhere, and I was always trying to fit in somewhere and just awkward. Alcohol really kicked in for me and started working for me when my first girlfriend broke. Well, actually, I broke up with her, but anyway, when we stopped going out, somehow that was painful for me, and I started drinking more, and it was like, hey, this actually makes me feel better. It takes away the pain, and I think that just some subconsciously, you know, I started drinking more because it didn't take the feelings away, but it didn't hurt as much. It wasn't as sharp. It worked. Over the next few years, I'm the kind of person that I go to a party and it's kind of like one of those, you know, bring something to share. And I would buy the old Milwaukee Light because it was the cheapest, or Pabst or whatever, and go and prominently display that at the party, and then I'd steal their Michelob and, you know, the Grolsch and Heineken's and all that stuff. I'm the kind of person, I would go in and go to a house party and I'd take a few beers and I'd shove them in back behind the vegetable drawer or in the cupboard somewhere so that later in the evening when everything was gone and, you know, I'm selfish. I was selfish then and still am. Fortunately, not to that degree, most of the time. This is part of what sucks about being on this panel is that I'm at the point where my eyes, you know, it's like, I don't know, should I hold it here, there, you know? Sucks. Anyway, the last time I had a drink was sometime in the afternoon of January 23rd, 84. I was watching the Beastmaster movie, which I really thought was pretty cool. I always wanted to be like that kind of guy. I was on my way to treatment, but I had to do my laundry first, and I was stalling for time. And I had been living up in Phoenix prior to that. I left Tucson. I moved a couple of times. Each time I moved, I thought, well, I'm going to quit drinking and stop smoking dope, stop chewing tobacco, get a haircut, get a job, get a dog, start working out. It's like a long list, right?
Jeez, that's a lot.
And I never quite could get that all kind of happen at the same time. I got here as a result. A buddy of mine went into treatment. He made it sound pretty cool, actually. It's like, hey, you can, they had volleyball and pool table and all the food you can eat. And I'm like, hey, I'm a slacker by nature. Cool. Somebody else pay for it. I could not work for a month. And I know what it's like to have a car repossessed. I've had my car repossessed. I've been fired from jobs. I don't know. Going to treatment. By that point, I had already tried quitting drinking a lot. I had, in fact, the last year of my drinking, I pretty much tried it 3-4 times a week. And usually it'd just be between me and the bottle, and it always won. But every once in a while, this is the kind of thing, every once in a while I would like say I'm not going to drink tonight, or I'm only going to drink so much, and then I would succeed at that, and then I would be confused, thinking like, oh, I have some control over this, some power over this. But the 99% of the time, I'm clear. I have no power over alcohol. I still don't understand it. The best I can appreciate is the idea of the allergy. I really like that. When I was in treatment, they talked about the allergy. That I can understand. Growing up in Tucson, I know what allergies are like. I know when it's springtime and I go out in the desert, I know what allergies are. I can't control that stuff. Well, now I have Zyrtec, so that helps. But there's no little pill for, you know, the alcohol allergy. I know when I drink, I want more. And something in my head says, give me more and I'll do anything for it. And I've proved that a lot of times. So, but anyway, I was 20 years old when I got here. I really wasn't planning on staying sober, quite frankly. Not that I didn't want to. I just didn't think it was possible. I didn't think that it was possible for me to stay sober because I had tried so much to stay sober and I couldn't do it. So I kind of went to a lot of meetings because there were these girls that were really cute and I wanted to hang around. I would hang around these girls and I'd go to these meetings and I started getting involved in the young people stuff and, you know, had a good time. But I'm still very socially awkward, and I'm still that way to some degree. You know, that has not changed all that much. But I was really grateful that there was young people in AA, and they kind of, you know, said, "Hey, come and go where we go, and do what we do, and let's have some fun and stay sober." And you know, it was good. I think it was in this actual room, it might have been the one next door. But my first AA conference, I hooked up with this girl and went home. I was like, "Yeah, this is all right." I was like 6 months sober. I'm thinking I can do this, and you know, I don't know. I was just an idiot. I didn't really know that it was really possible to stay sober. Like I said, because I know what it's like to need to drink and sitting around holding hands, praying and talking and reading, and you know, it's like, oh, what is this going to do? I got a sponsor and started working the steps, and my thinking changed. But one thing I want to it was really important for me early on was I went to a lot of meetings, and particularly speaker meetings. I really love speaker meetings. I like it when I can hear people tell their story more than a 3-minute soundbite and really get into hear what they have, where they come from. Because I understand now that identification is the foundation of recovery. If you're sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you cannot understand what they're talking about, you're in the wrong damn place. You either understand because you're an alcoholic, or you don't understand because even if you're in total denial, you're still going to understand something. Peace. I want to just that's one of the primary things. I really appreciated the fellowship, young people, and speaker meetings. Short version of my sobriety: started out great, did a lot of great stuff. Some stuff happened. I got pissed off at God. I stopped being accountable in AA. I stopped praying. I hated God, basically. And I went on my own merry way. Never stopped going to meetings, but I got really spiritually sick. Ended up 18 years sober, whatever, just ready to die. And finally recommitted to AA, got back in the program. And what I got married in AA, have two beautiful boys, going through a really nasty-ass divorce to this woman who, you know, it's a weird thing. It's a weird thing. But I'm grateful to be sober. I'm grateful for my kids. I wish the best for my wife and all that. And I know that out of all of the, 25 years sober, last year I checked into Cottonwood because my head was messed up. And I really have come to appreciate the value of outside therapy. I love the steps. I love what they've done for me. But I also appreciate that there's other people that can help me in lots of ways. If I know what it's like to feel lonely. I know what it's like to feel in love. I know what it's like to have my heart broken. I've made some money. I've made a lot of money. You know, it's life, and I know that you can stay sober no matter where you are in this recovery process if you just keep coming back and do the best you can, stay accountable, and keep honest, and thanks.
Thank you, Tom. And now our final speaker from Tucson, please help me welcome Chris.
I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic. I'm really glad to be here. My sobriety date is November 15th, 1976. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 19 years old, and I haven't found it necessary to go back out. This building brings back significant memories for me. I was 3.5 years sober when we hosted the International Conference of Young People in AA here. And my big memory is standing up on the top floor of this hotel wanting to jump out the window because I couldn't stand the way I was feeling anymore. Up to that point, all I had done with the steps was the first step. You know, I conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I knew it beyond the shadow of a doubt. There was nothing left to do but not drink. But I sure as hell didn't want to keep feeling the way I was feeling. I mean, I was just wandering around praying that I could actually feel like I did when I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was feeling the way that I felt just before I'd take a drink. I mean, that's why I drank. You know, and so I'm standing up there on that top floor contemplating that, and obviously I chose not to do it, thank God, but also that night is the night my life began to really change. I met somebody, I'd seen him in meetings around town. He was a fast-talking radio disc jockey who'd moved here from Southern California. And I had memories of these Southern California AA people as, like, you know, all they really talk about is working the steps. I mean, I thought it was kind of lame. I mean, don't you have anything better to do than, like, work a step? Or, I mean, that just kind of tells you where I was at. But I ran into Denny out in the courtyard. And for some reason, we sat down, we started talking, and I told him what was going on. I told him the truth. And he told me when he was 3 years sober, he had a .38 stuck down his throat because he couldn't stand the way he was feeling either. And he shared with me exactly what he did to not only stay sober but to change his life, and that night I started on that journey with him, and it's been just an incredible journey for me since then. That first week I did 2 4-steps and 2 5-steps, and there was still stuff I left out. There was stuff I wasn't going to tell a soul. I was going to go to my grave with them. And, you know, one thing, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and I put the drink down, put the drugs down, I was just left with this great big raw ball of emotion. Primarily anger, resentment, guilt, shame, remorse, the whole ball of wax. And it was, I really couldn't identify any one particular emotion for a long time. And when I went to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I told you, I spoke my mind. And it probably made absolutely no sense. And I know it scared the crap out of a lot of people. But it saved my life. And fortunately, nobody in Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to leave. You know, they didn't want to spend a great deal of time with me, but they didn't ask me to leave. They let me do what I needed to do. And that is something I really absolutely believe is essential for staying sober. I guess primarily because that's been my experience. I've got to bring my problems to Alcoholics Anonymous. If I don't, I will freaking drink. And I learned that early on, and I did that early on, and that's how I was able to stay sober, even up to that first 3.5 years, before I was willing to die rather than continue to live the way I was living. And once I did the 4 steps and the 5 steps, but there were some life experiences that I was going to just go to my grave with. I couldn't tell anybody, and I proceeded on with the rest of the steps. And it wasn't like this conscious decision, like, I'm not going to share it with anybody. It was like I ran into a wall with it. And I don't know if it was a God thing or what, but I just wasn't able to do it at the time, and my life was starting to really change dramatically. When I got here, I was broke, homeless, selling plasma 2 times a week, robbing family and friends. I had absolutely nothing when I got here, and so in that, the first 10 years was basically developing, getting, recovering physically, and doing what the best I could to just not drink and improve my life. But at 10 years sober, and I'm going to meetings all the time, and I'm talking to people all the time, and I went through a real stressful period that sent me, I started having panic attacks at 10 years sober. I had no freaking idea what they were. All I knew was I felt like I was going nuts and I had no control. I needed to go somewhere safe. And I went into treatment at 10 years sober. And I spent 30 days there and got back out. And as soon as I got on the plane to fly back to Tucson, the terror came back. And to me, that's really what it was like soul terror. That's the only way I can describe it. And it lasted for another 7 months. And I was working the steps. I was doing everything the program suggested. And I was really focused on the 11th step, the 10th and 11th step. And in the mornings, I had a ritual of reading pages 86, 87, and 88 in the big book. And it became a huge part of my life, and it still is. But, 7 more months of that was really getting rather draining, man. Maybe if I had any sense at all, I would have gone to a doctor, but I didn't. I worked the steps instead and tolerated it for as long as it occurred. And one morning, I'm just sitting on my couch doing my 11-step meditation, and all of a sudden, this thought comes into my mind, Chris, your thinking's controlling your emotions, and your emotions are controlling your behavior. Change the way you think. Like right out of what I was reading in the 11th step in the big book. And at that point, that type of terror left. And it hasn't been back since. Now, I'm not going to stand up here and tell you that I've been sober all this time and I've done all this stuff and I don't get scared anymore, but sorry, I do. I still get angry. I still get resentments. I have a solution for them today other than reacting. I can work the steps on them. They don't hang with me for anywhere near as long as they did. I get to continue to do this deal for the rest of my life, a day at a time. And I must tell you that I couldn't ask for anything any better in my life. This is a design for living that works perfectly for me. It has for almost 34 years, and I see no reason to quit doing what works. And I know these particular conventions, I don't think there were this many young people in the entire country that were sober back then. I know in 1976 there were 4 of us in town in Tucson that were under 20. I know at least 3 of us are still sober. I'm assuming the 4th one is. I just haven't seen him in a long, long time. And one of the things that we all had in common was being involved in service and putting on conventions like this. What great opportunities to start and finish something and really celebrate what our sobriety is about. But they are also good resentment factories, working on those little committees. Great opportunities for growth, although you wouldn't hear me say that then, but looking back, it was a great opportunity to work with another human being to achieve a common goal, and it was fantastic, So I just have a real attachment, I guess, especially to the young people in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I know what it's like to come in here. For me, it was, Christ, I'm 19 years old. How can I be a freaking alcoholic? How can I be an addict? I mean, I was barely legal to drink then. You know, plus, I really didn't drink like a lot of these people did. I don't remember ever finishing a six-pack of beer. It doesn't mean I didn't, but I don't remember. I mean, my tolerance for alcohol never really increased. I mean, it just took a couple of beers for me to get pretty drunk. And, I was hearing about people drinking fifths of vodka, you know, and cases of beer. And for a long time, I didn't think I belonged here. But fortunately, I stuck around long enough for the fog to clear to really see where alcohol took me. I mean, it took me right to the streets. It took me to the plasma centers. It took me to jail. I mean, it took me to extremely dangerous places with fellow alcoholics and addicts. I mean, it took me down, and it took me down in a hurry. And I don't know if any of you have ever heard this, but I know we used to hear it a lot, was stuff like, you don't belong here. I spilled more beer on my tie than you ever drank. Maybe there are still some folks around that say that, but we used to hear that. It's like, we're too young to be here. And I got to tell you, alcohol doesn't care. Alcoholism doesn't discriminate. It will latch onto us and latch onto us early and not let go. It doesn't matter how old we are. It doesn't matter what we're drinking. It doesn't matter how much we're drinking. What matters is what is alcohol doing to me, and having the fog clear up a little bit and really see where it was taking me was really important. And that's why that first step is so critical. I need to see for myself exactly what alcohol did to me. And as a result of that, I'm convinced still to this day that I'm alcoholic. You know, and it's real. I think it's important for every one of us to reach that point. And maybe some of us need to go back out and try the controlled drinking and whatnot. And there's actually nothing wrong with that. We need a full knowledge of our condition. So, in closing, I just want to say thanks to Tim for asking me to come up here and share, and I didn't plan on being here this long in Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought, you know, I'd quit drinking and I'd get a job, I'd get off the streets, you know, get my own place to live, get some money in my pocket, get a car, get married, and then I could drink. And that's literally the goal I had for my first year of not drinking. Obviously, that's changed a bit, and I didn't get married. Nobody wanted to be around me. So, anyway, we do what we got to do to stick around here. And I am so grateful that you guys are here, because without you, I'm screwed. You know, I believe in God, and I believe that God works through other people. And for me, the other people are you people. You know, so I'll keep doing this thing because I like the results I get. So thank you very much for having me, and keep coming back and enjoy the rest of the weekend. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. Here to read a vision for you, help me welcome Connor.
Connor, alcoholic.
Hey, Connor.
All right, a vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for will come to pass for and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
May I please have a hand for everyone who read today? Please help me thank our speakers once again. Alright, and now help me join hands and close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. Just a reminder, there's a panel starting in here at 4, so if we could clear out pretty quickly afterwards, it'd be appreciated. Thank you.